I'm in a New York state of mind.
Okay, welcome to episode 69 of Bulls Glee Cast. Oh, wow. Yeah, I just changed it up there for you guys a little bit intro. You're welcome. You're welcome, Mitch. Mitch and Natalie are on the show tonight. Hi, Mitch. Hi, Natalie.
Oh, hey.
And just a little update about Roxanne and Jack. Yes, they are still alive, and they're just busy. Jack works and Roxanne works and goes to school, so it's just kind of been some bad timing the last couple of weeks, but they will be back on the show, and we will be doing some more guest hosting type things in the future. So if you have anybody that you thought was really excellent on a previous episode of Glee Chat and want to hear them on the show again, send us a tweet or something at @Glee_chat and maybe we'll have them back on again. Remember Zach Louie, you guys?
He was I was about to say Zach Louie. Yeah, everyone wants Zach Louie back.
Yeah, and I saw him on Skype right before we came on. I was going to be like, hey,
you should have just called him. You totally should have.
Yeah, well, he might not have seen the episode, and we don't want amateurs on the show. So,
I mean, knowing Zach's pros, he would have been able to make it up on the go.
Yeah, that's true. Mitch, we were just talking before we started the show, getting together and creating a hypeable mansion.
Yep, hypeable mansion's happening.
And does this have any... Will this be in the same neighborhood as the Glee Chat mansion that we've always talked about?
Glee Chat mansion will exist once Roxanne comes back into my life.
Okay, fair enough.
Because she's just, like, MIA to everyone. And I'm just like... Yeah. You know, I text her or something. Like, there was, like, a big thing that happened at my school where, like, a car crashed into the front of the school and there was, like, you know, of course, police cars everywhere and... the same night, someone broke a fire extinguisher in my apartment complex, and they were in my hallway, like, spraying it. It looked like it was, like, a fire engulfing my hallway. So I texted her to, like, say, like, hey, there's some stuff that went down in our Fullerton College and all that, so what's going on with you? And she didn't write back, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, where's she been? I don't know. Maybe, hopefully she doesn't hate us. We'll have to check in and see what she's
doing. I think that she just gets very busy with
her
SoCal life. No, she's a cool girl. She just has a lot going on. So she gets very busy at Target and doing homework and being her sociable little cute self. She's adorable in person, guys.
We should just have her do like a pre-recorded second thing. And be like, just have like a yes
set
or no.
Her opinions.
Yeah.
Or she's going to hate this. Like throwing a lot of likes. Like, oh my God, like.
Yeah. I'll have like an iPad sound effect app press whenever I want her to respond. Okay, well, great. Yeah, so that's what's going on with her. And Mitch, you're doing a hypeable house. And do you want to elaborate a little bit about that?
Well, it's very preliminary, so I don't want to give out too many details yet, but there may be some hypeable people living together for the first time ever, and it's going to be exciting.
Very good. Awesome. Now, Patrick McCoy, who some of you might remember from Hypeable, he worked for Hypeable for a couple of months back in 2011, and was also a co-host of mine on Hypeable's now-defunct podcast, Hero Hype. He and I almost became roommates over the summer, but he got into NYU and things changed. So, so Hypeable is just bringing people together all over the world. It's a beautiful thing.
Indeed.
Natalie, what's new with you? What's going on?
Well, no one else from Hypeable lives in Sydney, so I don't have Hypeable.
Yeah, you won't be living in the Hypeable house anytime.
We have Jack who lives in
Perth.
Literally the other side of the country.
Yeah,
as far apart as you and John.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
Nothing new aside from getting weird.
Natalie. You should tell fans on the show, you and I were texting earlier this week because I got to meet and hang out with Pete Wentz, the bassist from Fall Out Boy, at Oxygen. He hosts a show on Oxygen called Best Inc. And he came into the offices for a couple of hours, and we did some fun stuff on social media. And Natalie, you're a big fan of his, and you recommended I read his book. Now, I had been like a fan of Pete Wentz for a while.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm like his biggest fan, but you know, whenever I'd see him on TV or an interview, I'd always typically read it. And then you told me to read his book. It's called Gray, and I had forgotten that he had released a book, and I read the first three chapters so far, and it's really good. I just wanted to tell you that.
Yeah.
Any relation to Fifty Shades of Grey?
No, it's not Fifty Shades of Grey.
No. It is a very good book. It is it's quote unquote a novel. It's not a novel. Literally everyone who has read it, including like close friends of his, like, yeah, when John says like he's you know, a fan of Pete Wentz, and that I'm a fan of Pete Wentz, I have sort of been in that like community, like since before Fall Out Boy was like a famous band, like a radio played band, like their first couple of albums. I have like close friends who are close friends with that band. I've never actually met them properly, but like a lot of because I didn't get to see them play, they never came to Australia and stuff when they were small, obviously. But I have close friends who like live in Chicago and are close friends with that band, or were around the band, like working with them at the time that book is set, like in the time that those stories were happening. And one of those friends came and stayed with me earlier this year, and he read it. He was like, yeah, this is true, 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 this is true. But it's not hard to tell what's not true, because as I was talking to John about, Pete Wentz was a very active blogger. Like, he blogged everything about his life, like, before he was famous. And a lot of those stories are completely recognizable from when they were happening in his real life. And the only reason it's billed as a novel is because the girl he had a long-term relationship with, which ended very, very badly, would, like, sue his ass for all it's worth if you know, like, an actual memoir and being about her. But he's a good writer. Like, he's a good storyteller, and he's a good wordsmith, which is why he has always written the lyrics for Fall Out Boy, because he can't really sing. He's not a good singer, but he writes the lyrics. So,
and he was such a great, fun guy to meet, and he's been fantastic with Oxygen and our show Best Inc. So it was really cool to meet him and then connect with him. It's kind of via you, Natalie, because I knew you're such a big fan, and it was just cool to meet him. Also, I forgot to mention this. Oh, actually, no, we haven't had a show yet. Last week, I don't know how this happened. Actually, I do know how it happened, but it's like a really long story that I can say at the time. But I somehow managed last Sunday, actually right now, because we're recording this on a Sunday, a week ago today, I don't know like who was looking out for me from the heavens above, but myself and two of my friends got into Lady Gaga's album release party, Art Rave, here in New York City. I mean, it was the party of the night. Like, if you were at Art Rave, you were somebody, except for us, basically, because we aren't anybody. But we got to go on this boat from 34th and FDR that would ferry us over to Art Rave, which was in this giant, like, I guess it was a place, you know those, like, big giant warehouses where they, like, build ships?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in one of those, and it was at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and I got there and was, like, tweeting about it. Like, I tweeted something about how my friends and I got in, and then I had, like, 8% battery left, because we stood in this line all night, and it was an invite-only, and somehow we got on the list. I don't know if I should even talk about it, because it might have been illegal. I don't know. I have no idea. But I was tweeting about it, and people from Glee Chat started tweeting us, oh my god, Darren's there, you need to go get a picture. And I was like, whoa, what? Darren Criss is here, that's crazy. I knew Tony Bennett and some other like people were there, but Darren's there. And by the time I got there, I was just so excited to be on this list and to be at this show. I mean, if people don't know, I'm a huge Lady Gaga fan, and her album came out last Monday, so this was sort of the big party of the night in New York City to celebrate. And we got there, and I don't know, I didn't forget, but I just got caught up in the Gaga stuff, and I was like, oh, he's probably backstage at the VIP lounge doing crazy celebrity stuff. So then, you know, she comes on, does like, I think, 7 or 8 songs or something, and then my friends oh, by the way, it was an open bar, so that was
oh, boy.
I probably drank an entire bottle of champagne just to myself.
I want you guys to all take a shot for me, little monsters. Just drink everywhere, monsters.
That's basically what she was doing, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we left at the end of the night. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I had to work the next morning. And I get back and I'm looking at all these pictures on on like Twitter and stuff. And Darren was definitely like standing like near where we were like the entire night. And people were getting pictures. And we're getting pictures with him. And I'm like, damn it. I could have probably just turned around and looked right at him. But anyway, just one of those other weird coincidences where Darren, Chris, and I don't know. I just feel like we have some weird coincidences, he and I.
He did look into your eyes deeply during How to Succeed.
Yes, that's true. And we met, Natalie and I met and talked with him afterwards. It was fun.
Totally.
So yeah, anyway, that was really fun. And if you were at Art Rave, tweet me at Jay Thrasher and send me your picture of Darren so I can be jealous that you met him there and I didn't. Anyways, okay, let's start rehashing some Glee. Thursday night's episode was the end of Twerk. I was really excited to hear that Glee was doing this a show called this because I really hate twerking, so I was excited to see them hopefully end it. Natalie, you had mentioned before we started the show that a lot of people that don't really watch Glee hate this episode. Do you want to elaborate a tiny bit on that before we just kind of get into the actual nitty gritty of what went down?
I just saw like an overwhelming negative response to this episode. And I mean, I think parts of it were really bad. I think some of the storylines were okay. Like, I think the New York storyline was quite, mm-hmm. interesting. No, I had a personal problem with that, which those people who read my Twitter or my recaps will know what my personal problem is. Big faux pas, Glee, big faux pas. But I think, generally, I think that the problem I think a lot of people had that I saw was sort of the oblivious white male Schuster's attitude to blurred lines and having him perform it and like everything happened, but I thought that Sue's cut down of that entire thing kind of like
made up for,
you know, Glee knew it was an issue when they did it. It wasn't like they were saying, yeah, like, yeah, this is a thing that we're doing and not saying is an issue. Like that they did actually acknowledge within, yeah, the show, true, that Schuster was gross, if you know what I mean,
right? So, and we talked a little bit about how that's happening a little bit more and more. Will's character has sort of developed a little bit in season 5 as somewhat self-aware of, like, how terrible he is a little bit, in my opinion.
Yeah,
maybe not
it's
terrible, but at least somewhat, yeah, retrospective.
I mean, I wouldn't call it, like, that Will himself is self-aware, but that the show is really self-aware, that Will ridiculous as opposed to, like, in season 1 and 2, he was, like, their hero and this awesome, strong, supportive dude and all this stuff. But so much this season, I mean, they were probably doing it a bit last season, so much this season, they are, like, throwing shade at his, like, at him and his stupid ideas, like, so much. And you see it in the club, like, you see, like, some of the students being like, what, when he says stuff, or, like, you literally just made that up. Or, you know, in this episode, Artie being like, yeah, that's not what that song's about, like, at him. Yeah. And then they're really, like, yeah, sort of very, you know, suddenly calling out these ridiculous things of Will. We're not supposed to. I think we had a couple of seasons with Will where we as the audience are going, wow, he's an idiot. Why are they, like, making it like he is the one, like this is a good idea and he's the one in control. And so now they're kind of trying to make it a bit more obvious that they, you know, are making him an idiot on purpose, which is
better
than.
Well, I can't help it. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's better than them having him be an idiot, but acting like that they think it's a legitimate thing to be doing, if you know what I mean.
And here we are yet again, another conversation on Glee Chat, wondering if everybody at that show is listening to what we say, because I can't help but notice everything that we're saying gets ended up developed on the show, you know? Anyway. So, yeah, good points. Okay, so let's start rehashing the episode that we sort of opened with Rachel singing You Are Man, I Am Woman from Funny Girl, right? Is that from Funny Girl? Okay, yeah.
It's a scene from the show. They were rehearsing, like, a scene that was going to be in the musical.
Got it. And I haven't actually seen Funny Girl, so feel free to correct me if any of you have. I didn't really like the song. I don't know. I thought it was kind of boring. It wasn't really anything special to me. Mitch, what were your thoughts about this?
I was digging it. To tell you the truth, in the first 5 minutes, I was struggling to find a live stream, so I barely caught the end of the song, and I saw her getting her hair cut, so that's all I was able to write for the show notes. I can't really give a sound opinion other than I heard a couple Broadway-sounding notes, so...
All right, fair enough. At least saw the whole thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think it was, like, meant to... You know, I liked it in the sense that it was one of the more, like... realistic scenes of the show. Like, here they are rehearsing a song that's gonna be in the show, if you know what I mean.
It was very Smash to me, by the way.
Definitely, so from what I saw, Smash than, like, you know, yeah. they're doing like a run through of the song that is later gonna be in the show, and right. It didn't have to be like an emotional, you know, show stopping performance. It was like an actual rehearsal number, which I really appreciate for the, you know, sense of realism. I was also surprised. I did not know that Ewan Gruffudd, the guy playing Nick Arnstein, the guy who's playing the, you know, the actor who's playing her lead male. I did not know he could sing. He was really good. Like, his voice sounded really good, and I didn't know he was a singer, because I've seen him in many other things. He's like a British actor. He's in loads of things.
Like what, though? Because I wasn't familiar with him. So what other stuff?
He was in, again, these are things that are kind of like, really like British culture-y things. But he was in the King Arthur, like the Clive Owen and Keira Knightley version of King Arthur. He was Lancelot in that. And he was in Hornblower, like Horatio Hornblower, like the long-term series, which is like a really popular book series and then TV series about like the Navy in like pre-Victorian times. It was massive, like for like... Yeah, people who are into that kind of thing, massive, massive, massive. But he is a famous actor, and Peter Facinelli, who's the director, is also a famous actor. He was in Twilight, probably best known to our audience, but he's also in...
Nurse Jackie, right?
Nurse Jackie, which is, like, still running at the same time now, but yeah.
Cool.
Good for him.
So they're both really famous, like, those guys, and so it's kind of cool. I just didn't know that Ewan could sing, which is cool.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, we'll get into more performances, and of course, Rachel's hair was a short wig in this performance. Well, we thought it was her hair, but we find out later that it was a wig, but we'll get to that in a second. In the next scene, Unique wants to use the girls' bathroom and ends up getting in a confrontation with Bree, the very mean Cheerio. She then starts a bathroom riot when she realizes that other people can be using different bathrooms for different uses. And there's not much to say about this just yet, but we'll skip over and get back to the Unique situation as we rehash. Back in New York, Kurt and Rachel bicker about Rachel wearing a wig. She says that she wants to dive headfirst into life to sort of help her get over Finn. And the two come up with plans to become rebellious in New York City. And it's interesting, in this scene for me, I was like, oh, okay, the Finn thing, we heard about how it wasn't going to just go away after the third episode, but it's interesting to me that it's becoming at least somewhat of a bigger arc already. I mean, this is only the fifth episode of the season, the second one after Finn's death, and it seems like they're going to really kind of make this a point throughout at least this season, of Rachel dealing with this. And I don't know how I feel about it entirely. I mean, obviously it's a huge thing, but I don't know. Natalie, what were you going to say?
I mean, that attitude, I mean, let's look at that for a second in terms of, like, the entire kind of plot is that you saw it in the hair salon, you think that she's getting her hair cut, she shows up to rehearsal with this, like, short bob, which is apparently the style of when the musical is set, but she did it, like, you know, of her own choice, yells at her because it's, you know, not in her contract that, you know, to make those kind of stylistic choices, which is true, by the way. Then, you know, lucky for her, he ends up liking, you know, the way it's used in the performance. Right. You know, the actor really uses it prop, blah, blah. But she kind of, you know, backs that up when she's talking to Kurt, you know, saying, like, I wanted to do something, like, risky and to make me feel alive. Like, I know that it could have, like, ruined everything for me. But, like, she's saying, like, I just risking it all and, like, not even caring what the result is. Like, not even caring if you fire on the spot or whatever. Like, Kurt ends up kind of agreeing with her, and it's kind of painted in a, like, beautiful, idealistic light. But, like, right. I see that as really destructive. So...
Yeah, totally. I was thinking that, too. Because I definitely thought along those lines when she said, like, let's go be rebellious, let's go do this. And I was like, is this the beginning of what could be her downfall? Because they definitely, Glee doesn't just introduce these themes into these shows and then they sort of dissolve in this way, especially with Rachel Berry. And I'm like, oh, is this like the first snowflake of an avalanche? Because I don't like the way that she said that.
The first snowflake of an avalanche. John Thrasher, you were an English major, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah, I just can't believe that she'd, that she would actually, because the thing that ends up, you know, the thing, the other rebellious thing they end up going to do is kind of less weird to me, though, again, she could get in trouble for that, with her job, but that seems to me less sort of problematic right. than literally doing something that is, you know, she's wanted career. This funny girl role her right. whole life, and she's done something that, like, she's literally saying, I didn't care what the result was. I didn't right. care whether they fired me on the spot. Like, that's really scary. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
And to get, like, a Broadway role like that and not care that you get fired on the spot because you wanted to just act out, that doesn't seem like someone who is mentally sane isn't thinking correctly at that point.
Well, it doesn't seem like Rachel Berry, especially.
No, it definitely doesn't.
Calculated every single move so far, so.
Totally, and I guess that we have all the reasons to assume that she's going to grieve in, you know, odd ways that we wouldn't think because of the horrific loss she's dealing with, but still, I mean, it's sad to see a character that is so up on life and is succeeding so much, kind of just throw it all away recklessly at a whim, though, and not for anything too important.
And yeah.
Obviously, Kurt's coping mechanism is apparently, like, you know...
Bandwagoning?
Just... No. Like, before she called, like, before she comes in as, like, come do crazy things with me, you know, what she calls out about Kurt is that he has just been... you know, existing, boring. Like, not really living, like, not just, oh, you're, it's not even just like, oh, you're boring, it's like, you know, his coping mechanism has been retreating, kind of, like, just doing what he has to do and then vegging out, kind of thing.
Yeah, and
going through the motions.
Also, yeah, very much going through the motions, and that's, yeah, definitely something that happens a lot in those circumstances and as well. Like, both of them are very realistic kind of acting out things, but they definitely both come from the same place. And it just made me worry a little bit that they sort of painted Rachel's option as, like, positive.
Yeah, we'll come back to this here as these two crazy kids go rebel against whatever it is they're rebelling against.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, Mitch said he missed the... first 5 minutes or so of the episode of the live stream, you ended up seeing the whole thing, right?
What did
you think of last week after discussing the Oakland booty, the opening scene of this episode?
It was kind of crazy to me because I'm like, we must have named the wrong episode because obviously we should have named this episode Oakland booty. I mean, look, here's the thing. I mean, Darren is just like, and Blaine, whatever, however you want to look at them, it's just like, I never really noticed it before. I mean, obviously, he's a hunk, whatever, everyone's in love with Darren Criss, but I was always like...
He's a hunk? You sound like you're from the Little Rascals. You're a hunk!
You're a hunk. But, I don't know, I was just like, yeah, that opening scene, I was like, I'm gonna need to rewind this, and or GIF this, and or talk about it on Google
Chat. Wait. I missed the twerk. Did I?
Did you not rewatch it?
I didn't think I missed anything.
Yeah, you mean the opening scene of the whole episode is basically Tina, like, filmed through, like, a video, you know, like a phone camera, Blaine, like, listening to music on his own, you know, on headphones while packing up the choir room, and, like, like hardcore bad twerk.
Oh, wait, no.
Chairs and, like, twerking against them and stuff.
We definitely named the wrong episode Oakland Booty.
And then I know. Tina's filming it. He sees her filming it and freaks out. He's like, go away, don't, blah, blah.
Wait, she Tina's filming it?
Yeah. Secretly.
Tina, Vapor Rape Tina, is filming it.
Yeah, of course she is.
And then she shows the rest of the club. Everyone's, like, laughing at him, and he's really embarrassed. And then Schuster's like, that's amazing. That's what we need. Oh, God. Give us the edge.
Oh, over God.
Throat explosion. We need to, like, give, put away our
Shut up.
Sweetheart image and do some twerking. And then Kitty and Jake give this masterclass in twerking to the, like, they teach everyone how to
twerk. Oh. And
I
not
love
only
Kitty,
that,
by the way. She might be my new favorite.
This is surely fan canon. Like, this is fan fiction right here.
Wait a minute. The best part of this whole scenario is when she goes, Kitty has two lines that killed me. First, she comes out and she's like, okay, listen up, you basic bitches, which was, like, so good, number one. Then, as, like, everyone's twerking and she's showing everyone how to twerk, she comes over and she's like, Tina and Ryder, you'll be twerking in the back.
And she's so, she's amazing.
She really is amazing.
Hardcore becoming my favorite, like, and like, the bit as well. Yeah, she's just, and I love her with Artie. I think it's, like, the best possible, like, pairing for both of them.
It
and,
is, like, it really is.
Her delivery is beautiful. Mitch, you've got to go back and rewatch.
Seriously, because, like, the thing is, like, the episode started, like, I thought with a song, like, you know, like a piano interlude or something. That's why I didn't think I missed anything.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Literally, like, I'm telling you, fan fiction. This is what you guys are reading to
It was a total joke. But Darren's
what a
butt,
fan
like,
service to like have Darren Criss twerk.
Or, like, pardon?
Wait, say that again.
What a fan service to have Darren Criss twerk. I swear they're listening to Glee Chat and they're like adding these scenes in last minute.
He's twerked a few times, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on who you asked, on like when he was doing the Teen Choice Awards or whatever he hosted earlier in the year. Not only did he twerk, he also made Harry Styles twerk.
Exactly.
And that is, like, massive. That's all over the internet. So Darren already has a twerking claim to fame.
John, I think we're going to have to start sharing a couple more GIFs. Because last week's Roar GIFs were pretty fun, but we have some really intensive ones of Harry Styles and Darren Criss. I mean, come on.
We do. We need to get them on the Glee Chat Tumblr, by the way.
So we should get the other ones that we were going at. Did we find... Yeah, oh, we were finding crazy GIFs. We can be like, hey, look at that Oakland booty.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry I sneezed on the show.
You're allergic to Oakland. How did I know?
I'm allergic to twerking, you guys. Okay, yes, we could talk about Darren's butt for a whole hour if we wanted to, but we have
apparently, right? I mean, compile the amount of time we've talked about just Darren Criss's butt from all the Glee chats, and I'm sure we're at least over an hour.
And that's fine with me. That's completely fine.
You know what? Flaunt it if you got it, you know?
Yeah. So on Sue's Corner, which makes its... I don't know. I haven't seen Sue's Corner since, like, season three.
Yeah, it's
been a long time. by the way, this was one of, like, I was talking about this before the show. This was one of, like, the first of several moments that involved Sue that I literally had to stop and rewind because I was laughing so hard. The newscasters sort of throw to Sue's Corner, and she sort of says hello to both of them, but she sort of says it more bitchily to the other woman. And the woman kind of just, like, she's like, and kind of, like, rolls her eyes at Sue.
Yeah, this is where I was like, how can you have such perfect continuity with Sue's Corner and not with the rest of the show? Because do you remember how she had the relationship with the dude and then he cheated on her with that other woman and now they went off and got married or whatever? Like, that the dynamic is still perfect.
It's so good. It's so good. I had to watch it three times. And all it is an eye roll, but it's just enough to make me just love the show. It's
totally.
Like, those are the things about the show that made me, hooked in all these seasons ago. Anyway.
I mean, you guys tell me this. Do you guys fall in love with a show that treats its recurring characters properly like this? Like, once in a while, a character will show up again and just, like, have a continuity moment that just makes me feel like, oh, wow, I've stuck with this show for a reason. I feel like I'm part of the world of Glee.
Yeah, for sure.
That's where I fit.
Totally. So at Sue's Corner, she's dealing with Miley Cyrus and twerking and says that she's making a law against twerking in Ohio public schools. And not much to say right now, but we'll get into more of Sue's hate of twerking throughout the rest of this episode. The Glee kids argue that they should be able to twerk at nationals. And then in Mitch's note here, it says, cue uncomfortable Will performance of Blurred Lines.
Oh, God.
The new directions twerking all around him. Thankfully, as a result, Sue fires him. The Blurred Lines, you know, the Matthew Morrison vocals were a bit awkward to me, but whoever else was on, I think Artie or whatever, I really liked, actually. And I wasn't a huge fan of this song. This summer in New York City, oh my God. I don't know if it was like this everywhere else on Earth, but everywhere you went this summer, it was blurred lines.
It was
lines.
Not just New York City.
Okay, good.
It spread, just like Audrey too.
I have not seen a song get so big in so long. And what is so weird is that the guy has had a career for 20 years.
Yeah, I know.
And Glee's done a Robin Thicke song before, like from the night, like When I Get You Alone, like the lame, awkward gap performance is Robin Thicke.
Oh, the gap performance.
But an old song. But just when he came back with this, I just... And Mac, not that I, like, care what happens to Robin Thicke, because, my God, some of the stuff he said in interviews is just ridiculous.
Painful.
But, like, imagine having, like, a pop career for, like, 20 years and never being, like, that successful, and then, like, 20 years into it, getting this kind of, like, number one gigantic, like, former MTV movie awards, like, thing. Like, that's
Well, here's
so
the thing,
weird.
Though. Robin Thicke, you know, to his credit, has had a long career. He hasn't had, like, a huge hit. Like, Blurred Lines, obviously, but he has had a pretty... I think he's had a couple number one albums when they come out. For some reason, he was just never, like, radio or mainstream. But now with Blurred Lines, he became, like, super radio and super mainstream. He's kind of like... You know how there are, like, a handful of artists that you don't really hear about, but they're actually massively successful? Like, I'm trying to think of, like... I think Celine Dion...
Like, everyone in country music...
Yeah,
yes, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. But like Celine Dion, she definitely was mainstream. I'm not saying her in particular, but you know, like she's had a couple albums in the last couple of years that you probably haven't really heard of or heard a hit from, but they're insanely successful because they have like a huge contemporary adult mainstream audience of people that will go out and buy the album and she'll sell a million albums. And I think Robin Thicke kind of fits into that category because he was never really, you know, radio friendly or top 20 friendly.
How old is he? Is he like in his late 40s?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, his dad is Alan Thicke, for those of you who don't know, which I didn't realize until this song came out this summer.
Well, for those of us who don't know who Alan Thicke is.
Oh, Alan Thicke.
I put a link to his Wikipedia article in the recap this week because Glee, that's like the joke that they make with Will when he's like.
Oh, right.
You know, Will's like, oh. You know, like, it's, you know, twerking is all about blurring the lines between categories. That's,
oh, yeah.
It's, you know, it's all there in that Alan Thicke song that I love. And I'm just like, I literally was just like,
That's such a Will Schuster thing to say, though, to be honest.
Because I think when they said they were going to do Blurred Lines, you know, ever since that was kind of announced, there was a lot of talk about, like, how, whether they were just going to be ignoring, like, the controversy surrounding it and ignoring, you know, that and they were just going to do it like any other song or if it was going to be about the controversy. And this was kind of somewhere in the middle, like, I think, like, how they handled it was somewhere
for
in the middle.
For those who sorry, yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry. No, I just wanted to say, for those who don't know, Alan Thicke was on The Facts of Life, which was a TV show back in, like, the 80s, I believe. And it was a pretty popular... show. I'm sorry, no, not The Facts of Life. What is it called? Growing Pains?
I'm gonna open the thing. Hang on.
Was it Growing Pains?
Growing Pains.
Yeah, Growing Pains. And it was a really popular show back in, I think, the like mid-80s, and it played on as reruns when I was a kid.
I have opened Robin Thicke's Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in his 40s, he's 36. But John, I am sending you I'm sending you guys the URL of the picture of him on Wikipedia. I've seen many of things of him in interviews and all of that. I know what he looks like technically, but his Wikipedia picture looks exactly like John Thrasher.
I was just going to say, it's funny that you said
Wow!
Because I've heard that over the summer. People would be like, you and Robin Thicke have the same hair.
You do.
I'm like,
you have the same face. And usually...
Oh, wow, that is crazy.
Usually, you know, he doesn't look like this. I think usually because he's not, like, smiling like a nice person. He's like... You know, in this particular photo, it looks so much like you.
You're cracking me up today, Natalie. Oh, my God.
We'll put the picture in the post on hypeable.com for those of you who want to check out the photo Natalie sent. And he does,
since, like, the... Apparently not, like, 20 years. Maybe, like, 15 years. But whatever. He's... Yeah, he was definitely, like, in that kind of, like, 90s, 2000s, like, soft hip-hop scene.
Right, exactly,
It was not that big then. And now it's just...
Yeah,
his song is just ridiculous, but...
Well, we'll get back to, Blurred Lines. I don't know. The performance was whatever. Mitch, did you have any thoughts about the performance itself?
I think I put my thought in when I just wrote cue awkward performance of Will's
Blurred Lines.
Oh, that's
true.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on from Blurred Lines. Kurt gets a tattoo when they go out. That's him and Rachel are out getting a tattoo. That's their way of being rebellious. It turns out that he gets the words, quote, "it's get better," which had me laughing so hard. I was like, oh my God, how are they going to get away with this on the back of his shoulder blades? And while we're, talking about people's looks and their bodies on Glee, I mean, I did not realize Chris Colfer was sort of rocking that body that he has.
Yeah.
The whole world did. He'd never been seen shirtless before that, right, Natalie?
I haven't seen him shirtless in Glee before. I've seen him shirtless in life, not in person, in other things that he's done. I think shirtless in Struck by Lightning, I think he's done photo shoots that show a fair amount of his body. But Glee has never shown him shirtless before, so a lot of people haven't seen. And yeah, he has a very decent body. He used to be fat. Chris Colfer as a kid was like overweight, and then kind of he was like a skinny, round faced, young adult. And then he kind of, I know he works out like a lot to like keep weight off. So like, I think he actually does a lot of physical training now.
Oh, well, good for him. Porcelain.
He's very pretty. Like it's like a sculpture like body too.
Yeah.
Yeah, very lean and very good looking.
Definitely. Yeah. But I'm sure that excited a lot of fangirls because this is just going to show my Glee creeping status. I told you guys that I look up all the guys in the show. I mean, I just have to feel out the territory. And then like I found Tumblr's a lot of Tumblr posts and Yahoo Answers asking for shirtless pictures of Chris Colfer, and they didn't exist and people couldn't find them. That was like a year ago, maybe before Lightning. So.
Cool.
Just going to say to any of our Glee Chat listeners, if you do go and get a tattoo, don't drink alcohol before you do it, and don't get tattooed by someone who would let you drink alcohol before you do it. And I'm not just saying that because you might misspell your tattoo. I'm saying it because you physically will ruin the tattoo because alcohol's a blood thinner and it will push the ink out. It will make you bleed more and it will push the ink out. So your tattoo will be a waste of money. Like, it will ruin it.
That is a great segue into a shameless Oxygen promo, because we have a new show premiering January 1st on Oxygen called Tattoos After Dark. And it's a 30-minute show that will air, I think, at 11 p.m. I don't remember the time. Tune in, sorry to tell you, but you can find us on Facebook. And it's all about these tattoo shops in L.A. where people come in drunk and get tattoos. So
that's literally it. That's
so they're
the
like
thing.
The worst, most ridiculous stories, are they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they have their other shows on TV, like it called Bad Ink or something like that. But this show is going to be so funny, and obviously Kurt could be on that now.
John, I'm going to be one of those reporters. Now, what separates your show from shows like Bad Ink? Like, what defines your show?
Interesting that you would ask me that, Mr. Cloud, because. Tattoos After Dark just has an edge about it that no other show does, and we have some really great stories that I think a lot of our fans of Best Ink, hosted by Pete Wentz, Wednesdays at 10 p.m. only on Oxygen, would really love to see and be entertained by.
This is just a Pete Wentz hour. Pete Wentz is going to find five different ways to work his way into this Glee Chat episode. I know it.
I know. You're right. Anyways, so yeah, that's a great point, Natalie. Actually, that's good to know for people who might be considering
getting tattoos. I think this is just my personal interest because I'm a moderately tattooed human being, but I was like, Glee, out of all the irresponsible things you've promoted, I cannot believe you're promoting drinking in order to get a tattoo, because that is so bad for so many reasons. I was so personally outraged, let me tell you.
But you have tattoos, Natalie? I think I know some of them.
I have like 10. I'm not someone who, like, you walk down the street and you're like, oh my God, that girl's really tattooed, unless you can see. I've got a big one on the back of my neck, which people see, like, a lot of. I've got, like, a singlet, like, a low, strappy top. And I've got some on my forearm, but I've also got, like, ones on my, like, side and my legs that you don't actually see that often. I actually, speaking of Pete Wentz and his books, I actually have a tattoo of, before he wrote this book, Grey, like, about 6 years ago or something, he published a book called The Boy with the Thorn in His Side, which was just released through his sort of merchandise company, and that's mm-hmm. more of like a picture book for adults, if you know what I mean, like a sort of dark, like a dark children's story style thing. And it is actually about the relationship with the girl who that book is about. But I have a picture from that book as one of my tattoos. It's on my leg.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Look at all the Pete Wentz connections. I like this.
Yeah.
Mitch, do you have any tattoos?
I don't have a tattoo, no. I think I've learned my lesson from my brother, who got a giant dragon tattoo across the entire side of his body, which he then proceeded to cover up with a giant koi fish, probably a little bit more classy.
Oh, my God.
But, like, it didn't make sense.
It's just too much, yeah.
Because, like, yeah. So I've learned from the giant dragon that it's not worth getting a tattoo because it's just you're going to have to cover up with a koi fish if you don't like it, and, you know.
Yeah. My roommate, who is this really skinny white guy who I would never in a million years assume would have a tattoo, but I don't know. I don't want to judge people that have tattoos. I'm just saying he doesn't seem like the personality that would be like, yeah, let's go get a tattoo. But the other day I was like, oh, do you have any tattoos? He's like, oh, yeah, I do, actually. And he jumps up off the couch and he takes his shirt off, and on the back...
Hubba hubba.
On the back of his shoulder blade, like basically right where Kurt's was, is this like brontosaurus, like just cartoon looking brontosaurus. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. What is the meaning behind it? And he was like, oh no, there's no meaning. Like a couple friends and I just love dinosaurs. So we went and got a dinosaur tattoo.
That's really cute.
That's it. That's
yeah. I was like, okay, I'm into that because I've always had this mindset, and I come from a family where, you know, a handful of my family members are like really into it. But I came from this mindset that you had to like have deep meaning and be really into it, and it takes you a lifetime to figure it out. And he was like, oh, no, we just wanted to go get dinosaurs on our back.
Is this the roommate that I met? One of the roommates that I met?
No, Mitch, I live with someone different now, actually. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of most of my tattoos, in fact, all of my tattoos are the first type that you mentioned. They are all very significant. A lot of them are like song lyrics or things in people's handwritings. But I have so many friends that have like especially people. It more happens with people who are really heavily tattooed. Like, once you start to get to the point where you've got like a full sleeve of like, you know, of tattoos, you start to seem like less of a big deal, and you start getting joke tattoos. Like, oh, they're offering like free. You know, it's Friday the 13th. A lot of tattoo shops offer like free work on Friday the 13th off like a particular. Let's go get a tattoo of a cupcake. Like on, you know, like it's all.
That's what I've heard. Is once you get you get like the bug, and then it's not as like a huge ordeal to get a tattoo. Actually, I want to share one last tattoo story. My coworker who works with me, she's the coordinator in my department, the social media team at Oxygen. She has like full sleeves and all kinds of great tattoos. She's pretty awesome, but she has a TARDIS tattoo from Doctor Who, for those of you who don't know. And it's really, really, really nice. I'm going to take a picture of it and I'll share it, and we'll post it on this show post on hypeable.com for episode 69. But yeah. Okay, so we'll get back to tattoos because I think we have another moment to talk about later on regarding Kurt and Rachel. But in the next scene, Unique is getting bullied in the bathroom by a couple of people that remind me of Karofsky, which really started to piss me off, and kind of gets his wig ripped off his head and flushed down the toilet. And Unique goes into the song If I Were a Boy, which is originally by an artist named...
Beyoncé!
No, actually. Beyoncé covered it. It's like
I read this story the other day. It was written like by a different writer, and then she was like pissed that Beyoncé released it as a single or something.
Yeah, I what is her name? I have it on my computer. Hold on, I'm looking it up now. I should have been more prepared. If I Were a Boy, performed by BC Jean, that's who it is. And she actually performed it, too. You can download the original, If I Were a Boy, by BC Jean. But Beyoncé covered it, so, you know, credit to BC Jean for writing the song. But yes, Unique now has covered the cover. And, you know, I said this on the show a million times, but I really think that Alex Newell is, next to Lea Michele, the best singer the show has. I mean, If I Were a Boy really lends itself to a great powerhouse vocal, but... I don't know. I just really, really, really loved his performance of this. And it obviously meant so much, the lyrics coming from his situation. And I sort of, as he was performing it, I was like, oh, wow, yeah. I hadn't even thought about this being an option, and it totally makes sense. Hasn't Glee done this song before, or am I making that up in my head?
No, Smash did. Maybe that's what you're thinking.
No, I didn't watch when Smash did it, but I guess I just assumed that they had done this song before, but yeah, I guess they haven't.
I don't think so.
No.
All right. What did you guys think about this performance, Mitch?
Yeah, it was emotional and heartfelt, and I'm glad that Unique got a feature, because I've been waiting for one literally ever since season 4, where she had that line during Rizzo's song during Grease. You know the song?
Oh, right, yeah.
Right, I've been waiting, I've been harping on that I wanted another emotional song about Unique's identity and all that.
Solo?
I can't think of another song that was, like, emotional and meant to be about her sexual identity. It was meant, they're always, like, I don't know, if anything, she had a feature.
Yeah, like, and performance, like,
Right. So I'm glad that storyline was finally addressed again, and I'm overall happy this episode was happening the way it did, because I think that they're just finally, like, checking off that box, like, oh, we have Unique, and we have friends for her, and we've done her sexual identity, so finally we set that aside, you know?
I was pretty interested in, like, I assume, obviously the performance happened in the choir room, I assume before she kind of started singing, she explained to them what was happening, because as soon as she finished, Jake stands up and is like, we're going to need some names. So it's like, is she psychic? But what? Regardless of that, I'm just going to assume that she explained why. I'm not going to nitpick that.
Right.
But she's most likely psychic. You've got it, Natalie.
She's immediately backed up by Sam and Ryder.
Now,
Ryder and Unique, are we meant to assume that they have sorted everything out?
That's exactly what I thought, too.
Like,
yeah,
like, you know, because he is up there. He's, like, looking really serious business. And he's like, you know, they're all like, we love each other. And it's like, is no hard feelings now? Like, is this something we didn't get to see? Because I would have liked to see them sort that out.
Me too, especially because we spent a lot of time on Glee Chat talking about that scenario.
Yeah.
Anything, they owe it to us, you know?
Yeah.
But yes,
like, I would like to see them become, like, epic best friends because they know how much they have the potential to be close to each other or something.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, this was a great performance. It was so nice to hear Alex Newell, who just recently got a full recording contract.
Oh,
I think we talked about that on the show. And he's just doing great, Mr. Alex Newell, so good for him. And yeah, I agree, Natalie, I thought the exact same thing, too, whenever Ryder kind of stood up like that. Okay, in the next scene, at a board meeting, Will gives examples of different types of dances seen as bad for their time period, and, I know we talk about Darren Criss a lot, blah, 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 but...
No, it was the cutest thing ever.
Yeah,
his little... Who was he with, Marley or Kitty? I forget.
Kitty. And they were both the cutest thing ever.
I was like, they need to dance together more because they were just adorable and I just want to see them do more of that. So,
in general, that whole scene, though, with, like, I'm like, gosh, if I was those school board governors, I would just be like, shut up. Like, what is wrong? But as I said, like, as we were talking about the whole, you know, making Schuster, like, you know, more of a joke, I loved that they were like, so next we have a talk from teacher. It says, like, teacher of the year. Is that a typo? Will Schuster, as in, like, totally throwing shade on the fact anyone would call Will teacher of the year. And I loved that. But, yeah, the whole, I mean, he had a point about the dancers.
He did, actually, yeah.
I mean, the one thing I did see people kind of getting angry about in terms of that and in terms of sort of the twerking in general is that, like, they didn't really hardcore address the fact that twerking doesn't, like, begin and end with Miley Cyrus, and that they, which is one thing, but he kind of says in 20 years it'll be dismissed as, like, a silly,
a silly dance,
silly and nostalgic dance, whereas all of the other things that they're talking, dances that they're talking about, like the waltz and the mashed potato and whatever, are things that were invented of that time, whereas twerking is, like, comes from, like, a tribal cultural thing, like, right from, like, back into, like, it actually outdates, like, you know, all of that. And I know I just saw a lot of people who were, you know, stressed about the episode in general sort of talking about that. But, I mean, his theories were kind of on point, and I guess they worked well enough for, you know, the board to be, like...
The board, yeah.
Overruled, they overruled Sue's decision, you know, because he walks in all smug afterwards.
Right. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. I don't know. I just thought the whole scene was cute. I wasn't really... I stopped paying attention to him.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll move on to the next scene. Sue makes a unisex bathroom for Unique, but it's placed in the choir room. It turns out that Tina was using it, and I don't know if anyone caught this, but as she comes out, I think Will, like, tries to, like, go on to the next thing, but I guess Tina stunk up the bathroom because he had a very foul look on his face when she came out. And it was just, I don't even know, maybe I just made it up in my head to laugh at it, but it was, like,
real. I don't
know, but
I just like that they're like, Tina, how could you? And she's like, what? It's convenient.
Yeah,
and it's the ongoing, like... Again, poor Jenna Ushkowitz.
Why do they hate Tina, who's been there since day one?
Yeah, she's never going to get any love. That's just it.
In the next scene, Kurt asks the tattoo parlor to fix the tattoo that they apparently screwed up, but it turns out that Kurt was the one who did it. He's shown the piece of paper that does, in fact, say it's Get Better. The tattooed man lets Kurt get it fixed for free, and we'll get back to that in just a second, what exactly that is. In the next scene, Bree picks on Marley and then tells her about Jake. Marley doubts her, and Bree tries to make it sound like Marley's bullying her, calls her and accuses her of slut shaming, and taunts her with what Jake's body looks like, which Marley actually still doesn't even really know. Later, Marley confronts Jake and then sings Wrecking Ball. Okay, so I have a love-hate relationship with Wrecking Ball. I love the song when it came out. I can't stand Miley Cyrus. I'm sorry. I know it's, like, everyone's thing to hate or love her. I just really do not like her.
So what do you expect to just not have an opinion and then be the hipster?
Yeah, exactly.
The hipster thing is like, I don't care about Miley Cyrus. She's not really in my world.
Yeah, like, it's not like that for me. I just think that, like, everything is an attention and marketing ploy, and I never subscribe to
it. Oh, it totally is, and she knows it. She came on a radio show I listened to. Like, I didn't listen to it for her. I was listening to the radio show anyway, and she came on a radio show to listen to, and she was talking about it, and she was like, She didn't even try to disguise it, which, I mean, kudos for that, I guess. If people are like, you know, she wasn't like, oh, it's just who I am. She was like, no, you know, if people are, you know, flicking the channels and they kind of see me and they're like, oh, that chick's probably going to be half naked, maybe they'll pause on the channel and then see that I can actually hold a note. And I was like, kudos for you for being totally upfront about that, but still...
But still, yeah.
Right, you're not very classy right now in the public
image. Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a time where she's going to either crash and burn, shave her head completely, and go into rehab. But there also could be a time where she rises up, becomes squeaky clean and beautiful all over again, and is America's sweetheart and all right. Yeah. So she's going to have to just choose her path from here because she's just been really drastic ever since the VMAs.
It's just so interesting. To me to see, like, you know, Britney Spears had a real problem and she went through it and came out of it, and now she's back on her feet. Christina did her, like, little, like, stripped era where she was, like, really gross and disgusting and then sort of came back out of that. I mean, there are people who actually make this part of their artistic work because of, like, life moments, you know? I'm thinking of Britney and others.
Yeah.
But now it's so weird to see pop culture sort of shift into this era where, like, people now create these problems for themselves because they've seen it tested and it works before. And I don't know, it's just not something I'm interested in. And I really don't like when Glee sort of harped on Britney Spears in the second Britney episode and made it seem like it was just like fun and games. Anyway, that's for a whole other podcast, honey. But anyway,
I read a thing recently about Britney, if I can just say one thing about that whole, again, she was on that same radio show that I was listening to, not the same time as Miley Cyrus. She was amazing, Brittany. Mm-hmm. But I read a thing about her and that whole head shaving thing, and she and someone talking about it might have been Kanye West, I can't remember, but saying, you know, they were saying to the interview, like, do you know, like, why she did that? Do you know why she shaved her head? It was because she didn't want people controlling her anymore, like, because people with, you know, you can't go outside without, you know, your hair looking like, you know, trying to control her image, and she was like, fuck you, I've shaved my head, what are you going to do about my hair now, kind of thing.
Oh my God,
and I don't know if that's the exact, like, mindset of it, but, like, I'd never really, like, read
That's like, awesome, man.
About the why, like, behind it. I think it was, like, obviously not as constructed as that. She was clearly in a very bad place, but it was like, I don't know any other way to take the control away from the people that are controlling me, so I'm going to take away something they try and control. And I mean, that's so scary.
Yeah, that's, like, terrifying to think about. And Gaga, not to continue on, but Gaga has made a lot of interview statements in interviews lately, in ahead of her release of Art Pop, about being, quote-unquote, tormented by the music industry. And I don't
tormented?
Know.
Tormented? What is that supposed to mean?
Because she's, like, a huge A-list pop star for these labels, and she wants to make music and not be sort of controlled by the label about what she was doing and all this other things. Like, for example, there are two really clear examples. First one is Applause was not supposed to be the first single. She wanted Venus to be the first single because she produced it and was most proud of it. But they thought that Applause would be the most radio friendly. So she went with it. And then actually Venus still isn't the second single. They released Do What You Want with R. Kelly as the second single because it did well as a promotional single. Mm. And then there's the line in her song called Art Pop that I am so obsessed with. The actual song Art Pop, and it goes, I try to sell myself, but I am really laughing because I just love the music, not the bling. And it's like the perfect example of like these artists like that get to a level of fame and they've signed off on these contracts that basically say, we'll give you X amount of money, but we also control your life. And I think people like Britney Spears and even Gaga to an extent, in different ways, have just reached that level of fame and that it's just like, I don't know, it's scary to think that there are people that, and record executives that actually care about that. And amongst all of this Miley Cyrus stuff, and we can tie this back to Miley Cyrus and Wrecking Ball, is that right after, or right before Miley Cyrus hosted SNL a couple of months ago, or a couple of weeks ago, Sinead O'Connor wrote an open letter to Miley Cyrus that was basically pleading for her to not give up on everything and just give in to this marketing ploy because Sinead O'Connor has been through it as a very successful artist and said that she can be artistic and sexual without being disgusting and trashy and all this other stuff. It's very much worth the read. If you're into the sort of industry, you could check out all that stuff. It's all very available online. But Marley sort of takes Wrecking Ball in a different direction in terms of the artistic, you know, integrity of it.
I mean, the song itself, if you didn't tie it in with the video that's made it controversial, the song is a good song and, and you know, they used it in the same context, you know, like, you know, Marley used it in the same context as to what the song is. Yeah. About. It was the video that was really the problem, but
yeah, and then
Lee's recreation...
Yeah, Glee recreated the video with Marley in just, like, I guess, short shorts and, like, a tank top.
Like,
And she was on a plastic wrecking ball that,
it looked
like
a balloon. It was the tackiest thing I've ever seen.
So tacky.
I was like, is this just tacky, or is this, like, some sort of really clever idea of, like, what Marley's psyche is like? Like, if you were going to make Marley herself herself into the wrecking ball video... This is what it would look like, because she is tacky as all hell.
she is.
Because, like, yeah, it was like, oh, it's a little, and like, the house that she was crashing into looked like it was made of, like, Lego.
That's what I was just going to say, with, like, this little cardboard bricks.
It looked ridiculous, and I'm like, was it meant to look ridiculous on purpose because Marley is kind of ridiculous, or is it just Glee being super tacky and this is the best they can do?
Well, they could have done this whole performance without that. Like, she could have stood on the performance
and just sung,
and like really got emotional with it, and maybe she like smashed a marimba or something. I don't know. Like, they could have done better and got.
But how many songs have we seen them do that with? And why are you going to do such an iconic song for today without following through with everything about that
because
iconic song?
Unless you have an actual wrecking ball and like
if you only have a balloon, don't do it. Like, go all the way or
I think that's true in this case because that's what made the video kind of interesting. Like, don't half ass it and cheapen it.
Yeah, I have seen better YouTube parodies of that video than actual YouTube parodies of that video where they have gotten their own crappy set that look more like the real video than that did. So if they were going for the video recreation, the only excuse I have is that it's like what Marley would think of, if you know what I mean. Not like what Claude would think of. Because
that's
I don't
a good
think
way to rationalize it.
Yeah, because I don't think she would really smash something in real life. I like, think that's her coping mechanism. That
that's true.
She wouldn't really smash the marimba. Like, she doesn't have that in her. But in her brain, she can throw things through window and ride a plastic balloon through a chocolate wall. Like, you know? Like,
Natalie, that needs to be, like, the biggest Tumblr quote I've ever seen. Like, that needs to just be a gif of, like, your face and that those words flashing. That's what I'm picturing right now.
Wait, did I miss... What's a chocolate wall? I don't know what that
chocolate.
Is.
Chocolate. I just think the wall looks like a block of candy, like a block of chocolate. Like rather than like, I don't know, like it looks so...
I know what you're saying. I don't know why that's so...
Like white chocolate, yeah. Like crumbly. I agree.
Interesting,
And you know what? My favorite version, this is totally tangential, I swear. but there is a really, 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 really funny version of Wrecking Ball going around. Where it's like taken down into like really menacing sounding.
Oh my god!
Have you seen that? And then the video is put into negative, so it's just like blues and whites and blacks, and it has like four or five overlays and like different octaves at the same time, so it's meant to sound like basically like devil worship music or something. It is the funniest thing ever, and it's just it brings such a, like a hilarity to like the over sexualized song, and then. I love it. I just think that anyone who like really digs Wrecking Ball will love like that contrast that people are just tossing out.
It gets stuck in my head so much.
It's actually like, funny. Oh, sorry.
No, go on. It just weeks and weeks. It's just me and everyone I live with screaming it.
Came in like a just like you greet each other, you don't even say hi. Just go. I came in like a.
No, I was just saying, it's funny you say that, Mitch, because right before we started recording, I just saw that for the first time, and I have it on my phone here.
Oh,
we can play
parody.
A little bit.
Oh, yes, please do, John, please
this
do.
This is actually not even a parody, it's just Wrecking Ball in G major, and they actually just changed the chords down to a different key, and it's actually really terrifying, and what made me click on it was our friend of the show, Maraid, had a tweet, and it said, "Welcome to Hell, a.k.a. Miley Cyrus singing Wrecking Ball in G major." So obviously I clicked it, and here's what it sounds like. Here, we'll play a little bit of it. Okay, here we go. Ugh. Can you guys hear it?
Oh, we can hear it. We kiss, I fell under your spell of love. No good denial. You can go to the chorus.
Yeah, we'll go to the chorus. I just want the way I will always hold you. I can't lie, I'm in for life. I will always hold you.
I can't.
Okay, I can't listen to another moment.
Holy crap!
That song. That's terrifying.
I mean, play the Beatles backwards, but like, holy crap!
Wow.
John, that's going in the show notes. That's just happening.
Wow. That's. Anyway.
I'm like, I have tears because that was just, it's all too fabulous. And I love that the caption of the video is, it's not even her final form. That's just my favorite part of it all.
So check it out on our post for this page on hypeable.com, episode 69, if you want to watch it. Anyway, about Marley, though, I thought it was a great song. I think she did great vocally. I think she sings better than Miley Cyrus, so it was
sounded
enjoyable.
Very similar, like kind of.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was pretty surprised.
But it wasn't good. I didn't like it. I didn't like her performance. No, I thought that she was striving too much to be Miley with her vocals, and it didn't work because Miley has that really unique rasp to her voice. Right. So Marley would have been fine if she like smoked for 2 weeks, but that's it.
Marley, Miley. I just realized they're kind
of... and that's probably another reason they thought that was really clever.
Yeah. All right. At rehearsal, Unique asks to use the bathroom. Will acts as a bodyguard and tells her not to get used to the adversity in life. He says, quote, "You need to just keep on finding the places you belong." And this was the moment where he unlocked the bathroom for her, right?
Yeah, she kind of... It was nice cinematography in that, like, she's sitting there throughout the whole rehearsal and everything's sort of on fast forward, like, from her perspective until the point mm-hmm. where she's like, I need to use the bathroom. And,
right. You
know, as in the porta potty thing. And, yeah, Will takes his, like, this is stupid, and takes her to the, faculty bathroom.
Well, my thing was, I was like, why didn't he think of this before? Like,
yeah, because...
Always an option. I don't know.
Probably, like, was a last resort.
Really giving him too much credit as an, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, interesting, yeah.
That would have been my first port of call as well. Like, honestly.
Right,
that
mine too, obviously. Well, let's not give him too much credit. Anyway, moving on here. Kurt gets a tongue piercing, which... the tattoo guy threw in, I guess, as part of this whole situation with getting his tattoo fixed.
You say he just threw it at his tongue and it landed in.
Yeah, I don't know. That tongue piercing thing, well, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
Gets his tattoo fixed and it now says, it's got Bette Midler, which is, like, unbelievably amazing.
It kind of, like, I love how Rachel's like, it makes no sense, and Kurt's like, no, it makes perfect sense. And I kind of like, exactly. I get it, I totally get it. Like, and it's cute. Like, I think what the tattoo guy said to him was, like, really nice in the sense of, you know, he said, like, look, if you, you know, when he's like, why would I want the tongue piercing? Like, and then there's kind of a pause, and I'm like, yeah, you know why gay men want tongue piercings? But, no, anyway. You know that's a thing, right? Like,
I mean, yeah, I didn't know it was a thing, but now I can understand how it's a thing.
Okay, it's a thing, but...
oh, right, yes, it's definitely a thing.
Anyway, but, you know, people get them for fashion reasons and stuff as well, but it was definitely, like, a culture, like a subcultural thing.
Definitely.
Anyway, besides from that, the tattoo guy was like, you know, the reason that we're going to do this, the reason I'm going to fix this for you, and the reason I'm going to do you a piercing is because... if you just let this be a screw-up, you'll never take another risk again. You'll never be like, you'll think that, oh, no, if I do that kind of thing, it'll fail and it'll be crap. But if you make this into a positive experience, positive memory, and you like the outcome, then you won't be afraid to, like, go after the juice of life or whatever
he says. I kind of missed that whole speech. I like that.
It's really nice. Like, it was a really good sentiment, and I really... And, like, Kurt, the way Kurt was responding to this guy was so cute. It was, like, it was a great conversation. I really, really liked it. And then when he came home and showed it to Rachel, that was, you know, when he was, like, you know, they turned it into, you know, it's got Bette Midler. And he was, like, yeah, kind of got a bit creative with the phrasing. But, like, it kind of make, you know, I get it. It makes sense, as in Kurt, you know, Kurt's attitude and stuff. And it's
no, totally.
It's and it sweet. Also made
it is super sweet. It also made me think that, you know, I'm not a huge Bette Midler fan, but I follow along with her life, and I think she's great. And I'm like, what if Bette Midler ever came on Glee? Would they ever, like, address this in some kind of weird way? Because I could totally see Kurt being like, you know, you kind of look like... And then kind of, like, pointing to his tattoo, and then them being like, oh, never mind. But, you know, Bette Midler has said that she wants to be on Glee, so maybe we'll see.
But if she said that, then why aren't they doing it?
I don't know, but I remember when... I think Ryan Murphy and Bette Midler ran into each other at, like, a GLAAD Media Awards or something, and he invited her on, and I remember reporting about it on Hypeable, and she was like, oh, my God, I'd love to be on. I want to be... I think she's even said somebody specific, but I can't remember who exactly.
John, let me be both a horrible gay and horrible Broadway fan. I don't know who Bette Midler is.
My God! Get off!
Goes against all my culture, I know.
How are you on Glee chat and don't know who Bette... Just leave right now. Hang up. No, don't. You're recording the episode, so we can't afford it.
Bette Midler is a huge, huge both Broadway and sort of pop star.
Well,
Jewish,
here's the thing.
Comedian kind of woman. And, yeah, sorry, go on, John.
I was going to say, Mitch, don't you love Hocus Pocus, right?
Oh, she's the Red Witch.
Wow. No, Bette Midler demoted to, oh, she's the Red Witch. Oh, right. My God.
I got it. I got it. I know who she is now. Only from that role, though. What else would I know her from?
Beaches?
Yeah, I guess he wouldn't, but he wouldn't watch Beaches. He wouldn't have seen Beaches.
Have you seen the
First Wives Club?
Have you seen Gypsy? Like the most recent musical. She was Mama Rose in like a lot of the like Broadway version of Gypsy, and then they made it into a movie. Like, you know, the song, the you know, Everything's Coming Up Rose, Everything's Coming Up Roses. That's her song.
Kurt
obviously sung it in the
There we go. Now the connections are starting. All right.
And like she was also like, because of the movies and she's very adult contemporary. Like if Celine Dion is like the prissy princess adult contemporary, Bette Midler is like the rock star adult contemporary.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great way to put it, yeah.
And my mother loved both Bette Midler and Celine Dion massively. But she was a huge like kind of cabaret pop star type person. And
she's still around. She's not doing a ton, but
yeah, I mean she is, and yeah, but she's got Grammys, Golden Globes, like Tony's. She's been let me just read this on Wikipedia. She's been nominated for 2 Academy Awards and won 3 Grammys, 4 Golden Globes, 3 Emmys, and a special Tony Award. Oops. So
okay, no, now
quite a big deal. But yeah, Hocus Pocus definitely.
I told you I was being both a horrible gay and Broadway fan.
No, it's okay, Mitch, because the reality is, I think Natalie and I come from, we're not that far removed from you guys, but we definitely grew up on different stuff than I think like you and Roxanne and your age group did.
Yeah, because there's like, a 7-year difference between me and you, John?
Yeah, I think that's just enough to sort of make it a little bit removed from people like Bette Midler and others. But
totally.
We won't hold it against you. But anyways, he admits that he did this to wake himself up from a trance after Finn and goes to Skype with Blaine and hopes that he'll get quote-unquote cyber lucky, which kind of made me feel weird. I was like, is Blaine showing his stuff on Skype? That's kind of awkward.
He's showing his Oakland booty.
I mean, I guess that's fine if it's Kurt. But
that's why he was practicing his twerk.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
He's going to do the twerk fail like on Jimmy Kimmel.
Rachel admits that she didn't get a tattoo, but then later we see her go into the bathroom and look in the mirror, and she has a tattoo of Finn's name, just Finn, above her pelvis. I kind of suspected this whenever she was saying that she didn't get one. I just thought it seemed a little bit out of place.
When she said to him, you know, I just couldn't think of anything I'd love enough to, like, get tattooed on my body for, like, the rest of my life. I wasn't 100% sure that she'd already got it, but I thought that we would see her going back to get it, you know what I mean? But then when she pulled up the show, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, no, she just... I don't know why she wouldn't want to tell her
That's what I thought.
But I don't know, like, some things are really,
it's melodramatic, doesn't have a purpose.
You know, some things are
so private. Personal. Right.
I guess. It's like when you're in the hallway and you like are walking towards someone and you're like, say excuse me, and you move to the right and they move to their left and you're like, oh, excuse me, do it again.
we kept pausing for each other, but I'll just real quickly say what I was going to say, which is that since working at Oxygen and on Best Inc., hosted by Pete Wentz, I kind of have been immersed a little bit more in the tattoo culture, and I kind of have thought about, like, what if I did get one? Because I was always like, I always thought that for myself I would be too against it. Afterwards, like, I would like it, but then maybe eventually be like, oh, I wish I didn't get this. But now I'm like, I don't know, if I ever did get a tattoo, it might be the way Rachel did, in that it might not be super meaningful like Rachel's, but I think I would like hide it, and it would just be for me. I don't know why. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. If any of you listening,
so wait, John, you're not gonna get a koi fish?
I would never get a koi fish.
Like, we're talking from hip to above the armpit, like you know, going up on the chest. Like, that's a large koi fish.
No, I would never do that.
I mean,
I just feel like it would just be too much. I don't know. But anyway, if you're listening to the show at home and you have a great tattoo, send us a picture of it and a story behind it. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Especially fandom tattoos. It did used to be like...
Oh, yeah.
You know,
tattoos.
Tattoo culture used to be a more, you know, obviously sort of seen to the world as, you know, belonging to a specific kind of subculture, but now it's obviously, you know, all sorts of people have all sorts of different tattoos, and there are so many, like, fandom tattoos, even little ones, like private ones. I know, like, a lot of people get, like, the Deathly Hallows symbol, like, tattooed in between their fingers, on the side of their knuckles, so, like, it's just, like, they're kind of to show their, you know, tribute or whatever to... Harry Potter, or, you know, all sorts of things. And yeah, two of my tattoos are Harry Potter related, actually. But
can you talk about either of them?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to. One of them is, like, across the big one I have across the back of my neck is, like, a really traditional tattoo font, like a hand-drawn sort of scroll font that they do, like, a color gradient. So it starts, like, in a dark color at the bottom and then fades up to no color inside the text. And it just says always, and it's colored in green, which is obviously...
Oh, my God. I have
a friend that has a tattoo of always on her foot, too, on, like, her... on the ball joint of your ankle.
And I literally stopped this girl on the street. I think it was at Leaky Concert. It wasn't that big a deal, but it might have been somewhere else. She has across her collarbone just, like, she has, and it's not colored or anything. It's just black, like, underneath her collarbone, but it says until the very end, like, dot, 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 as in, like, mm-hmm. the last line of the mm-hmm. dedication of Deathly Hallows, like, that this book is dedicated, like, seven ways. And, you know, the seventh bit is, like, to everyone who's stuck with Harry until the very end. And my other one is just behind my ear, which is, like, a moon, like a crescent moon shape, as in, like, for Mooney, like, for Remus Lupin.
Oh, there you go.
So, that's the other one. And, yeah, a friend of mine has the Sirius, like, the pad foot, the paw print for Sirius.
You got it.
And we've got them done at the same time, so...
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
That's really symbolic.
But, yeah, fandom tattoos are really... cool. Like, I don't know how you'd get a Glee tattoo. I'm sure lots of people have, like, the, you know, one in
yeah, some if way, you were,
but I don't know what you would get.
A, like, slushy?
I know people might have, like, the logo, or they might have, like, Gleek or something, if you know what I mean.
I'm sure somebody out there does. If you're listening and you or somebody you know has a Glee tattoo, tweet us at Glee_chat. We really want to see what people have out there.
If you get the picture, we really want to see your tattoos, guys.
Yeah, if you don't get it, I want to see what it looks like. Okay, moving on. Will announces that twerking is over. That's right. Will Schuster has announced that twerking is over. And does so that Unique could get the bathroom key. The Glee Club supports Will's decision. The new directions perform On Our Way on a giant merry-go-round, which looks like the most fun I've ever seen in my life. I really want to go there and jump on it. And sing this song with them. And I actually hadn't heard the music for this episode prior to it, because I had been so busy with work I hadn't had a chance to listen. But Tariq from Hypeable had actually messaged me and was like, oh my God, what is the song that aired at the end of Glee? Who's the original song? And I was like, I have no idea. And I hadn't even listened to it yet. And then I watched the episode and I was like, oh, I love this song. It's called On Our Way. And I don't know much more about it. He told me the artist, but I feel bad. I don't know.
I looked it up because it was a song, again, yeah, that I'd never heard. And it was interesting because it's a song called On Our Way by a band called The Royal Concept. And apparently they're Swedish. And it's a really unusual situation for Glee in which they have done a song by a pretty unknown artist. Like, it's a recent release. It only came out in September this year, and this episode was filmed in, like, early October this year.
Oh.
And so it's a song by a unknown artist, well, pretty unknown, obviously, and not one that's just written specifically for Glee. Like, it's not, like, an original song for Glee, like that Roots for Branches song or whatever.
Right.
And it's not a song that's, like, a well-known pop song. It's, like, something Glee has only done once or twice before, where they have done promotion for, you know, they've done this song that ended up being massive promotion for the, you know, original artist, when the original artist wasn't very well-known. Like I'm not talking about, like, when they did, like, Fun, and then Fun got really massive because Fun already put out one album. This is a band that doesn't even have, like, an album yet. So... they did it once before, and I remember they tweeted the video. I can't remember. It was that song that had the black and white, like, the cameras in the video. Like, they did the...
Big New World or whatever? Oh, wait. Was it the Big New World or whatever?
Yeah, Great Big World or something like that. Very similar circumstance to that. So I'm wondering if these people are, like, friends or paid some special promotion deal or something that they, like... Because it seems really random that Glee is using this song, like, technically, like... has no significance.
Totally.
Yeah. Mitch, did you like the song? And then I'll play a little bit of it here in a second.
Yeah, well, when I was doing the recap for Glee Chat, I ended up having to Shazam it to see what was going on, too. So it was kind of fun. And I appreciated being turned on to a new artist. I'll have to check out some more of their stuff. What was the name of the band again, Natalie?
The Royal Concept. Apparently, the song is also on, like, the new, like, FIFA or, like, some new... computer game. So maybe they have just got a really awesome promotion company that's getting some really awesome deals. Like,
here's a little bit of the song if we want to hear a little bit of it real quick from Glee. Ugh, I actually really love Darren's voice on it.
It's super European style pop, like that, like, you know, do you think, think we're on our way, or whatever.
Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'm gonna tell you what I want.
That kind of repeating, like, repetitive thing is really like the European style pop as opposed to like American style pop. But it was cool. But the scene sort of that it led into with Will being like, oh, I've decided to cancel twerking. Yeah. Well, I mean, what did you think of sort of the scene where Sue, you know, confronted him about that, about being like, okay, I have, I will give Unique a key to the private bathroom if you stop twerking. And he's like, no, and like chucks a Sue tantrum. And I'm like, dude, your initial answer should have been yes to start with. I don't know what you were trying to prove here. It was really weird, and she was very funny in the scene, Sue, but really weird decided to react like that, and then apparently off-screen had a change of heart.
Well, I love... Okay, so just real quick, another moment that I love, which I sort of posted an Instagram video of my favorite Sue moments from this episode, but when Will walks in and she says, well, you can wipe the smirk off your face, and then you can wipe your chin because there's a butt on it. I was laughing so hard.
I know.
And then Ducky goes, Will, do you have an appointment? He's like, no. And she goes, then get out, bitch!
See, I am slightly curious about that Becky situation, because his face was really taken aback, and she's kind of increasing in her, like, levels of
aggression.
Aggression. Totally. Yeah, like, and I'm wondering if that's going to become a thing, if you know what I mean, because it's getting sort of, to me, past the point of funny. Like, it's, like,
that's true.
I don't know if it's meant to be funny or if it's meant to be like, oh, that was awkward, if you know what I mean. And I feel like there's a storyline in there somewhere. I don't know if they're,
she did bring a gun to school because she didn't feel safe, so was that supposed to give us the impression that she was really paranoid and thus feels the need to be really angry and mean toward everyone?
I don't know if it's going to, like, prove that she's, like, really impressionable and, like, following on from Sue too much, and Sue hasn't realized that she's, like, making problems for herself. And, you know, because, yeah, it seems like all she does is come into situations and be, like, inappropriately aggressive at people. And while that's funny for a while, it's also a little bit odd. So, I don't know, it just made me wonder if that was going to be, like, Will's reaction to it, like, kind of him being like, what the hell, made me wonder if it's going to end up being a thing.
That's a good point. I didn't really think about how he reacted to it, but yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think Will's just terrible, and I think we all agree, and I don't know, I'm getting so exhausted even just talking about him in this episode, because I'm, like, so bored with him.
Yeah, anyway. I just don't know why that he was like, no, I'm never going to... I love that Sue in that scene was like, really? That's where you're going to draw your line? That's where you're going to plant your red flag and fight me? Like, when I'm saying, stop doing this stupid butt dance because I don't like it, like, and I will give your transgender student a bathroom of her own. Like, that's where you're going to draw the line? And clearly Will knew that he was wrong. Because he ended up changing his mind about it, but why on earth did he try and fight on that?
Because,
like,
he stooped down to Sue's level, and he shouldn't have to. He should be smarter than that. But he's not. He's not smart.
Yeah. More awkward moments from Will to come in the future episodes, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for the rehash for this episode, but we do have one more really quick news story. And Natalie, I wanted to sort of throw this over to you, because you reported on it on Hypeable, if you want to take it away.
Well, basically, in regards to the Typhoon Haiyan that happened in the Philippines last week, or about 10 days ago now at this point, we have Darren Criss of Glee, obviously, is part Filipino by birth. Like, his mother is a Filipino immigrant to the United States, and a lot of his family lives there. And when the disaster happened, there was a lot of sort of celebrity, you know, oh, donate here, you know, all different kind of support. And he didn't mention anything about it on Twitter, and I was kind of surprised. Like, I was kind of keeping an eye open, like, being like, is he going to say anything about this? Like, or is it too close to home? Has there been some sort of problem? Like, and a few days after it happened, he tweeted being like, okay, it took me a little while to put this together, but I have developed basically a page on my website, like a page on his website, offering sort of a partnership with one of the donation agencies, the World Food Program, in which if you send him an email with like a screen cap of your donation, he's going to mail out, like physically mail out a collection of postcards that he's going to sign. Like, he's designed the front to have your name and everyone's name in the campaign. Like, it's like a mosaic, you know, donating to the relief fund, and that he's going to sort of sign them and send them out on the back as a thank you, just for those, you know, it's sort of a motivation to people who may not otherwise have been donating or wanted to donate directly with him or something like that, because it's obviously something very close to him. And he posted a video about like why he was doing it. It was very emotional. Like, it was just a little, you know, you could tell that it was quite emotional, and it was just a nice scenario, I guess. He's looking for donations up until Monday, so hopefully if this episode comes out before Monday...
it will, yeah.
Then
it comes out tonight!
Yeah, then you've got another day to donate for Darren, you know, to get a postcard from him if you want one. He wants the donations sent off as quickly as possible. And it was just... it's just a really nice sort of donation idea. You know, celebrities kind of promoting charity and all of that. So, you know, sometimes it comes across as genuine and sometimes it comes across as a bit sort of shticky and PR. Yeah. But this, obviously, so many people know that, like, so much of his family lives there and stuff, that they know that it is actually a really personal situation, that the only you know, he's doing it to use any visibility he has in order to try and help. And it was just sort of nice, I thought, and obviously quite sad. Yo is sad. Like, he
is
sad. So
I try to donate when I can, whenever it comes to these huge national or even international disasters. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I feel like there's always something happening, so I only can really donate, you know, whenever I have the money. And I actually hadn't yet for this one, and then saw this posting. I did end up donating $25 to the World Food Program, and I guess I'll get a Darren Criss signed postcard. But it'll be interesting to see all the names on the postcard. I think that's a really cool idea, to have the names in fine print and sort of a way to connect with people that came together like that. Did either of you send in any money for this in this way?
No, I didn't. And I'll just go ahead and say a big elephant in the room, which was that I considered doing it just to get the signature, which made me not do it, because I was like, wait, I'm really not, you know, doing it for the care of the event that's being donated toward.
Well, I think that's fine, Mitch. You should still... No, I was saying, Mitch, if you haven't donated yet, I think you should, if you have the money and...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the exact point of why he's doing it. Like, to be completely blunt, I think he's doing it to say, I know that there are people out there. He is taking, you know, taking advantage, quote-unquote, of his fans by saying, I will, if you wouldn't donate just for the sake of donating, maybe you donate for me, like, if you know what I mean. Like, and that's, you know, it is definitely designed towards people who would be doing it to get the postcard, and therefore, you know, you can call those motives whatever you want, but his aim is to raise the money
for them.
If you know what I mean. It's so, then yeah, I did donate because I was, I donated somewhere else as well, but I donated as to his, because as soon as I saw the story and I saw the video, like, I honestly, as soon as it happened, he was one of my first thoughts. I was like, so much of his family lives there, and like, so many people are homeless now. I wonder if anything's happened, especially when I had, you know, he didn't tweet or anything like that. Like, I was like, has something happened with him? And right. So the fact that I would like, you know, I wanted to do it as something for,
right,
you know, to help support what he was supporting.
Right. And I mean, I hate, this is terrible. So many thousands of people died and so many thousands of people are displaced. So, yeah, even if you're listening to this episode after the fact, after Darren's campaign has ended, which will end Monday, November, what's tomorrow now? 18th. Yeah. Find another way. The World Food Program will always accept donations for this. I mean, this is... I think this one was bigger than, like, Hurricane Katrina, right? That's, I mean, it's
a lot. Yeah. No, it's a lot bigger. I saw a big graph of, like, the amount of people killed and damage done by Hurricane Katrina and compared to other ones, and the amount of aid given to each one, and it's very disproportionate, if you know what I mean. Like, the amount of relief that was put into Hurricane Katrina, not that it wasn't deserved, was so much larger than what's been put in by the world to this one, when this one is... a lot bigger. It's like the second biggest storm ever on record. Like,
yeah, so that's in the world, like, ever?
Ever, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, Mitch, I think you should go donate if you have the time and money.
That
yeah,
is so it, shaming.
It, no, I'm just saying, if it, don't let it be because, you know, you felt like it would be just to get the postcard. Just do it because, you know, it's $25. You never know where it could, how it could help.
Right. Yeah, it's...
I mean, well, I mean, Natalie, the fact of the matter that you said this is, you know, obvious, it's bigger than Katrina and it's the second biggest storm, like, ever, it did sway me because I fit with where you do, John, sometimes, and without getting too much into that heavy material, I do feel very bogged down by the relief for a lot of things because it just, there's only so much money, time, and effort that I have in a day, and I can't, I can't help out everyone that I want to, so I kind of pick and choose what I think it's important, and, I know, this sounds like such a PSA, but I feel like this one is an important one enough to warrant it, and I'm glad that Darren is using his fans, he's taking advantage of them in a good way to get relief for his hometown.
So let us know if you donated. Tweet us, Glee_chat on Twitter. Let us know if you donated, if your name's going to appear on the card. And if you're listening to this after November 18th, there's still a chance to donate. You can go to hypeable.com, and we have all the information in that story that Natalie whipped up for.
Yeah, Darren also did provide, like, he was like, if you want to donate but you don't, like, he addressed it. He was like, if you want to donate but you don't care about getting a postcard from me, here's a list of 20 other places you can go and donate to. Like, he totally acknowledged that in the story as well. So he knew exactly what he was doing when he was doing it, but he was going to use, you know, his fame to sort of get as much money as he can for it. There was something else, like, a news thing, not a news, just something that we discussed in a previous episode that I just wanted to bring up with you guys because I'm so confused about it. You know when we reported that they weren't doing a Christmas album and that they weren't going to be doing a Christmas episode?
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently they are. And
an album too?
There's a 6-song EP that I've seen like news about floating around. I don't know if it's like confirmed, but I've seen like a list of like 6 Christmas songs apparently they're meant to be doing that will be released as an EP, and that they're filming a Christmas episode right now, and I'm like, all I can beg is that they address that this is not actually the right time of year in their storyline, because what the hell is going on? Well, I get they may want to release
I was gonna say hopefully it's gonna be like somebody falls into a fountain again and they sort of flashback or something, but what were you saying?
Yeah, I get that they might want to release a holiday themed episode like for around, you know, the holidays, like the last episode of the winter, you know, before the winter break, but come on, like, we're not stupid. Like, if you really want to do the current pop songs that haven't come out yet in the timeline of Glee, then fine. If you really want to do that, then whatever. I don't even care. However,
don't you guys... have the president of Sony or Columbia or whatever saying there's definitely not a Christmas album. That's a whole different.
Yeah, it's not a and it's not Christmas, guys. Like, you guys keep acknowledging that you are about to go to like nationals, that it's like the end of your school year, that it's about to be like, you know, graduation for Blaine and Sam and everyone. So why do you think it's Christmas? Are you doing a time jump? Are you doing a flashback to like Christmases of, you know, Christmas in July? Just
this goes back to the news that we did report on alongside this, which was that, and Darren, I think, lightly noted on this in the interviews, but you know, everyone's saying that there's quote unquote an unaired episode of an unaired Christmas episode, but they aren't necessarily saying it's a Glee episode or it's a, you know, whatever episode. They're saying there's an unaired episode, Christmas episode. So maybe they're going to spin the language and the whole scenario around so that it makes sense. So maybe we shouldn't jump to the conclusion, but at the same time, it's like, but at the same time, you know, the head of Columbia is saying, oh, we're not having a Christmas episode. So there's a lot of weirdness happening around the Christmas stuff. Maybe it was a last-minute decision and they just went with it.
Well,
I don't know.
Good.
Anyways, we'll see what happens. I'm sure those photos and videos will start popping up very soon, and we'll be reporting on all of that on Hypeable.com. Speaking of Hypeable.com, check out Natalie's amazing recaps every, Friday morning here on the East Coast?
Yeah, I think so, generally.
You do a great job on those, and we get a lot of responses, and they're fantastic. So check those out every week. And I hope you don't mind me speaking for you there, Natalie.
Oh, no, that's okay.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram. We have an official Instagram account, which you can find us at Glee Chat. There's no underscore on our Instagram account. I haven't been posting to that. Have you guys? I need to start doing
that. No, because I couldn't log in or something. Like the... I think Instagram just doesn't like when you have too many people logged in at once all across the world. It's you're probably faking it. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm legit.
Well, we did change the password. You remember that, right?
Yeah, and it still wouldn't work. I don't know. I was just frustrated. So, sorry, guys. No Instagram pictures quite right now, but I'll fiddle with John to figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. And that's it for this episode of Glee Chat. And next week, we turn 70 episodes old, you guys. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
We're way past retired.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We'll be back. The next episode is called Moving Out, and it features one of my favorites, Billy Joel. And we'll be back hopefully a little bit sooner than Sunday next week. Sorry about the late episode. That's it for me. Is everyone else have good to go? Anyone else have something to say?
Totally. No? We did Glee Chat today. I'll tell you that.
That's true. We're all coming up on 2 hours. All right, everybody say goodbye. See you next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Adios. Hey Glee Chat fans, are you obsessed with baked goods and delicious holiday treats like I am? Then you need to check out Hester and Pearl, a mother-daughter home baking business from Long Island, New York. They have an amazing array of delicious baked goods that you can purchase and have delivered right to your doorstep this holiday season. And Glee Chat listeners get a special discount. Use promo code GLEECHAT at checkout now through January 1st for 15% off of your order. Head to hesterandpearl.com/shop to check out all the goodies. That's HesterandPearl. I've had the raspberry almond bars, and I'm not kidding, they're so good. I actually asked if I could promote them on Glee Chat because I want all my Glee Chat listeners to be enjoying their amazing food while they listen to us on the show. And don't forget to like them on Facebook as well at facebook.com/HesterandPearl. Do, 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 do